Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday morning. And this is the first Sunday of January. In fact, I just glanced at my calendar and I still have my 2014 calendar hanging in front of my desk set on December. So that's a change I'll need to make. I'll need to put up my 2015 calendar and switch it to January. This is the year that I kind of thought would never arrive. I remember when Jasmine started like kindergarten or first grade or something, I counted ahead to see what graduating class she was in. And at that, you know, it was 2015. And at that time, that sounded like, oh my gosh, that'll never get here. And it's here, you know, and, you know, we just stay steady and now and time, you know, the appearance of time comes and goes. And here's 2015. So welcome to January 2015, everyone. We're going to start our gathering this morning the way that we typically start, which is taking the opportunity to greet one another. So I'm going to play a little bit of Awakening by Deva Premal and Mitten. And y'all, enjoy saying hello to one another.
The calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here, melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Again, welcome everyone. I see a few more people came into the sanctuary while we were greeting one another. So it's wonderful to see you on this very first Sunday in 2015. Some of you may know that David Hempel has been here. He's gone now, but he was here between Christmas and New Year's. And we had a lot of interesting discussions while he was here. And one discussion that came up a couple of times is awakening together. And why have awakening together in the first place? Is it doing anything? And my first answer to the question, why have awakening together, is simply it was guidance. I told David that when I receive something that I know is guidance, and there are times when it just comes, it's so clear to me that it's guidance, that I don't question it, I don't think about it, I don't ask, should I do this or should I not do this? I simply say yes. And many of you have known me for years, and you know that's true. So the real reason for Awakening Together, from my perspective, the first reason for Awakening Together is simply it came as guidance to do so. But for me also, many of you know that my favorite sentence from A Course in Miracles is that the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. So I told David that as far as I am concerned, that Awakening Together is here for me. I told him, of course, he could hold the same perspective and that everyone else could hold the same perspective. But it's not about looking out into the world and saying, huh, how is Awakening Together affecting you people? Is it doing anything out there for you? That's just not the way I think. That's not the way I look. The question is, what is Awakening Together doing for me? And I told him that, you know, the purpose of Awakening Together and the core values of Awakening Together, they also just came. In fact, they came so quickly. When they started coming into my mind, I was literally standing in the kitchen. So the first place that our purpose and core values were written down was on a napkin, because that's the only thing I had to grab was a napkin. So I grabbed a napkin and I wrote them down, and Danielle was standing there, so I shared them with Danielle immediately. But when I look at this purpose and this core values in them alone, even if you ignore everything else that Awakening Together does, if you just look at the purpose and core values, I can see in it right there how if I truly live by that purpose and core values, it's helpful in my own awakening, my own atonement, or accepting of the atonement. For example, one of the things it says in our purpose is that we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. So if I accept that for me, that means my purpose, my only purpose for living, my only purpose for being, is awakening to one true self, and there are no other purposes for me. Another thing that you'll find written in our core values is that we support one another on different paths of awakening. And I don't know if you all have ever honestly tried that, but I committed myself to that once the guidance came for Awakening Together. And in the beginning, I actually found that to be very difficult, to support one another on different paths of awakening. I found that sometimes what some people perceived as their path of awakening, my ego perceived as wrong path, you're barking up the wrong tree, that hiking trail will never get there. And what my ego wanted to do was, in some way, if not say something out loud to them, at least inwardly resist and judge. But if I surrender to our core values, I'm not only asked to accept that people are going to be on different paths of awakening, I'm not only asked to let go of my judgment of different paths of awakening, I am asked to support others who are on a different path of awakening. That takes so much humility and so much letting go of ego. That one core value alone is incredible. But then we have another core value that says we are asked to listen to each other, respect each other, and allow each one to be where he or she is. I found that to be the same difficulty. Sometimes where a person was standing, my ego wanted to tell them to stand somewhere else. You know, maybe they're in a place right now where my ego would say, you're just parroting so-and-so, whoever you've been reading or whoever you've been listening to. You're not really going in and seeing this for yourself, right? But I'm not asked to judge anyone. I'm not asked to tell anyone that they should be in a different place than they are. I'm not even asked, you know, to tell the people who are murdering that they should stop murdering. I am asked to listen to one another, respect one another, and allow each one to be exactly where he or she is without me asking that one to move at all. And I think that when David was here, that's one thing that he saw that I practice. I not only practice that on the spiritual path, allowing people to be where they are spiritually. But I practice that with my boyfriend, with my daughter, with everyone I come across. I just let them be where they are. Another thing our core values asks us to do is to practice letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Just one of the things that this means is I need to watch all of my personal opinions and all of my personal identifications and all of my personal attachments and be in a practice of noticing, oh, there's another way that I hold on to this idea that I am Regina. Let go, let go, let go. And then we also have a core value that reminds us to continually reflect on the changeless truth. So while I'm letting go of all of those personal attachments, personal opinions, personal identifications, I can also be checking for that which is constant, which is always here, which is closer than any idea, and be reflecting on that. So as far as I'm concerned, if nothing else had happened with Awakening Together other than this purpose and these core values being written down on a napkin and me choosing to live by them, Awakening Together would be worthwhile. I'm going to move into our announcements now. And Lynn, I may need you to write a yes or a no on the board. Originally, Lynn had told me that we needed someone for the NTI daily reading on Tuesday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time and on Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My question, Lynn, is do you still need someone on Tuesday? When I checked the schedule this morning, I saw a name there. We'll see if she's around, see if she answers that. No, you do not. Okay, that's what I thought. So now we only need someone on Saturday. And for those of you who are not aware, nearly every morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, we gather together for the reading of NTI most of the year. At the end of the year, it's in our Ramana. Tuesdays, it happens to be at 9:30, a different time. But the rest of the week, it's at 10. And we have someone for every day except for Saturday. It's a half-hour opportunity to come and read the daily reading and then share from your heart whatever comes from you to share regarding that reading. If you'd like more information, you can contact Lynn. You'll find the daily reading schedule if you go to reginadonacres.com under the Now menu. You'll find the daily reading schedule. It's a very short reading, typically about a page and a half. So again, we're looking for someone to do the daily reading here in the sanctuary on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, now that the cold, cold winter is upon us and the holidays are behind us, it might be a good time to start thinking about a winter getaway to a warm place. And we do have a Course in Miracles retreat coming up March 1 through 7 at a resort in Baja, Mexico. The presenters that will be there, the first one is Jennifer Hadley. In fact, she's the one who organized this retreat. Also David Hoffmeister, John Monday, Maria Felipe, Gary Renard, and me. And it is an all-inclusive resort. It has 5 pools. It's right on the beach. There's a jacuzzi in every room. And Jennifer has said, although, of course, we will be spending time in retreat together, she says there will also be free time just to be together at this lovely, lovely resort. And since it is an all-inclusive resort, the price of the conference is more than just the conference. It also includes the room and includes the meals. And from what I understand, you can eat the meals in any of the resort's restaurants. You can even have food delivered by the pool because it's all-inclusive. So wherever you feel to take your meals, you can take your meals and it's included. There are also other resort options that are involved, like I think part of the spa is included in the options. Part of the spa is additional. But you can find out information if you just go to our website, awakening-together.org, events, and then click on the link about the Baja Mexico retreat. Yeah, and when you register, if you go to our page first, and then click on the link to register from there. The cookies keep track of the fact that you registered from our page, and then Awakening Together gets credit. And of course, Awakening Together earns money based on who registers with Awakening Together credit. Jennifer also said that they would be calling each and every participant and making sure the credit was going where that participant wanted the pay credit to go. So if they do that, then everybody who wants Awakening Together to earn money from their registration will have the opportunity to say so. Also, we had some classes that are starting this week, an NTI class starting this week and a True Meditation class starting this week, but registration has closed on those because these classes have homework prior to the first class time. So the participants are already involved in doing homework. But we do have a class opening up in February. That some of you may want to consider. Registration for that class is open until February 3rd, so you've got a little bit of time to think about it. The February classes, is going to be the Bhagavad Gita, but it's going to be offered at two different times for you to choose from. The Bhagavad Gita is a 3-week long class, and the purpose of the class is both to introduce you to the Bhagavad Gita, but two, to help you start practicing receiving your own guidance from what you read. So the 3-week class will be offered. One opportunity to take it is on Tuesday evenings from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That will begin on February 10, but the homework begins a week before that, and that class will be taught by Jay McCormick. The other opportunity to take the class will be on Wednesday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. That will begin on February 11th, but again, the homework begins a week before that. It will be taught by Nikki Dobson. Both classes are $60. And so if you want information, you can just go to our website and click on classes beginning in February. And yeah, Barb pointed out that the link says January, but it's actually February. I probably just need to go change the link name so that it just says classes starting or something, because I edit it every month and that same link name will stay there. So I will just change the link name at some point. But yeah, if you just go to Awakening Together website, click on classes, you'll see where it says class starting in February, and you can click there. Again, you can register up until February 3rd. Also, as Lynn mentioned just before the gathering started, tonight is our member meeting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right after the 7 Steps teaching, which is at 7 p.m. One thing that a number of people have asked me to do at the member meeting is to make myself available to answer questions, spiritual questions. I don't do personal counseling or coaching. And last year I did have 2 mentor groups, so I had some people joining with me every other week in order to just ask questions. But I've stopped doing the mentor groups this year. And so they were asking, when will we have the opportunity just to ask questions? And so I said I can do that during the member meeting. So I will have some business to present, but there will also be opportunity during the member meeting just to come and ask any question you want to ask at all. So I want to make everyone aware of that. So again, the member meeting is tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's it for the announcements. So I am going to play our opening song. Actually, all 3 of our songs today are going to be songs that were written by John Lennon. The first one is also sung by John Lennon. Y'all will know this song. I thought it fit well with my discussion of the core values when I was talking about allowing each one to be where they are and supporting each one on different paths. This song seemed to fit very well by that. Some of you may have already guessed what song it is. It's Imagine.
No hell.
To prayer. I will begin with a few moments of silence. Gratitude for being here now. And also a reminder that being here now does not refer to the body in this chair at this weekly gathering. Because although that may be the limited experience of the personality, body, mind, that is not the truth of what we are. The truth of what we are is so grand and so expansive that the mind can barely grasp it. It is far beyond the mind, far beyond the world, before the mind and before the world. And yet both the mind and the world come from it. When we forget what we are, there is suffering. Because when we forget what we are caught up in the mind and in the world. But when we hold on to the realization of what we are, although the mind may continue to be the mind and the world may continue to be the world, there's a natural transcendence. It's called the peace of God. It's the peace of knowing what I am. Peace itself. I am peace itself. Gratitude for being here now as myself. Peace. Amen. All right, it is time for our inspirational reading by a member. Nancy is going to be our reader today. She's going to be reading from I Am That by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And the reading from that book that she will be reading is Real World is Beyond the Mind. Nancy, the mic is yours.
Thank you. Thanks, Regina, and good morning, everyone. So as Regina said, this conversation with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is called The Real World is Beyond the Mind. Questioner. On several occasions, the question has been raised as to whether the universe is subject to the law of causation, or whether it exists and functions outside the law. You seem to hold the view that it is uncaused, that everything, however small, is uncaused, arising and disappearing for no known reason whatsoever. Maharaj, causation means succession in time of events in space, the space being physical or mental. Time, space, and causation are mental categories arising and subsiding with the mind. Questioner, as long as the mind operates, causation is a valid law. Maharaj, like everything mental, the so-called law of causation contradicts itself. No thing in existence has a particular cause. The entire universe contributes to the existence of even the smallest thing. Nothing could be as it is without the universe being what it is. When the source and ground of everything is the only cause of everything, to speak of causality as a universal law is wrong. The universe is not bound by its content because its potentialities are infinite. Besides, it is a manifestation or expression of a principle fundamentally and totally free. Questioner, yes, one can see that ultimately to speak of one thing being the only cause of another thing is altogether wrong. Yet, in actual life, we invariably initiate action with a view to a result. Maharaj, yes, there is a lot of such activity going on because of ignorance. Would people know that nothing can happen unless the entire universe makes it happen, they would achieve much more with less expenditure of energy. Questioner, if everything is an expression of the totality of causes, how can we talk of a purposeful action towards an achievement? Maharaj, the very urge to achieve is also an expression of the total universe. It merely shows that the energy potential has risen at a particular point. It is the illusion of time that makes you talk of causality. When the past and the future are seen in the timeless now as parts of a common pattern, the idea of cause-effect loses its solidity and creative freedom takes its place. Questioner, yet I cannot see how anything can come to be without a cause. Maharaj, when I say a thing is without cause, I mean it can be without a particular cause. Your own mother was not needed to give you birth. You could have been born from some other woman, but you could not have been born without the sun and the earth. Even these could not have caused your birth without the most important factor, your own desire to be born. It is desire that gives birth, that gives name and form. The desirable is imagined and wanted and manifests itself as something tangible or conceivable. Thus is created the world in which we live, our personal world. The real world is beyond the mind's understanding, right and wrong, inner and outer. To see the universe as it is, you must step beyond the net. It is not hard to do so, for the net is full of holes. Questioner, what do you mean by holes, and how does one find them? Maharaj, look at the net and its many contradictions. You do and undo at every step. You want peace, love, and happiness, and work hard to create pain, hatred, and war. You want longevity and overeat. You want friendship and exploit. See your net as made of such contradictions and remove them. Your very seeing them will make them go. Questioner, since my seeing makes the contradiction go, is there no causal link between my seeing and its going? Maharaj, causality, even as a concept, does not apply to chaos. Questioner, to what extent is desire a causal factor? Maharaj, one of the many. For everything, there are innumerable causal factors. But the source of all that is the infinite possibility, the supreme reality, which is in you, and which throws its power and light and love on every experience. But this source is not a cause, and no cause is a source. Because of that, I say everything is uncaused. You may try to trace how a thing happens, but you cannot find out why a thing is as it is. A thing is as it is because the universe is as it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate you being willing to read today. This reading is so incredibly rich. I look at it and I wonder how in the world to ever share about it in such a short amount of time. We could probably spend weeks literally looking at this same little reading. One thing that's very, very interesting about this reading, it talks about cause and effect. And Nisargadatta says there is no such thing. If we were to look at Buddhism, we would find what appears to be different, and yet it's the exact same teaching. Buddha talked about cause and effect. And in fact, Buddha talked about 12 links in the chain of interdependent and continuous cause and effect. 12 things that in the way they interact with each other cause everything to be. But if you look at those 12 things, you'll find that they are very, very broad. And probably everything that we can think of fits into one of those 12 things. So when Nisargadatta says that everything that is as it is because the universe is as it is, that's the same as the 12 links of interdependent co-arising from Buddhism. Another thing that Nisargadatta says is he talks about the source, the supreme reality, he calls it, the source of all that is. And yet, at the same time, he says it is not a cause. The source is not a cause. That can sound pretty confusing, but A Course in Miracles basically teaches the same thing. When A Course in Miracles says, God did not create the world. So what is the cause of this world? What is source? What are we? Or said another way, what am I? I like the way Nisargadatta words it, primarily because it's the way it came to me in my own mind first, before I read Nisargadatta. Therefore, his way of speaking is also my way of understanding. That everything causes everything. It's like in a loop of causation. And if you look at a circle, right, a loop is a circle. If you look at a circle, where can you find the beginning of the circle and say, that's the cause? You know, you can't. You can't. You can't look at a circle and find the beginning of the circle and say, that's the cause. And so one way of saying it is there is no cause, but another way of saying it is that everything is the cause of everything. The two statements are the same. When Buddha talks about the 12 links of interdependent co-arising, some of the things that he says are a part of the cause are our own ignorance, which means our own not knowing about reality, our own not knowing who we are, what we are. In the prayer, you heard me say something about when we forget who we are, then we get caught up in the mind and caught up in the world. It's that being caught up in that is a part of the cause, a part of the circle. He says our own belief in an independent will, our own belief in an I want this, I want it my way, that's a part of the cause. We could also say that's the belief that I am a person. He talks about the senses being a part of the cause because the senses, you know, when I look at the world, the senses tell me there is a world. I see a world. I hear a world. I feel a world. I smell a world, right? And that belief itself, which seems to be caused by the senses, is a part of the causation. And the list goes on. I won't continue to read the list. If I was to summarize the list, which I love to summarize things, maybe you could call me the queen of summary. If I was to summarize Buddha's list, I would say believing that experience is real is the cause of additional experience. Believing that experience is reality is the cause. So what makes the world or creates the world, depending on the word you like to use? It's the believing. And what believes? It's the mind. The mind believes and projects simultaneously. You could call the believing cause. Or you could call the projection cause, if you want to label something cause. But it's a loop. And this continuous loop of believing, projecting, that circle is what makes the world. So why is it then that Nisargadatta says that supreme reality is the source of all that is, and yet he says it's not a cause? I'll try and explain. I'll try and explain using something else that Nisargadatta says. If you all just for a moment look at your mind and look at a memory, any memory at all, it could be something that happened 2 hours ago, a very recent memory. Like this morning for me, I was trying to get the songs ready for the gathering and none of my songs would play because I had used up all of my iCloud space and I had to go upgrade my iCloud in order to get my songs to play. That's a memory for me now, that event. I can look at that memory and I can look at this present moment right here, right now. Which one seems more real? The present moment has a stronger sense of reality than the memory. The memory, there's a weakness to it. There's a fadedness to it. Do you see that? Even though you may remember it and the mind may say, I know that happened, therefore it is real, there's still a fadedness to it. It doesn't have the light that this moment has. And Nisargadatta teaches that the reason this moment seems real is because of the light of what you are. Your light is here now, lighting up the appearance and making it appear real. Any reality that it seems to have is actually your present reality. The light that you are is here now. The light that you are is not in the past. That's why memories don't seem to have that same crispness about them. The light that you are is not in the future. That is why future imaginings don't have the crispness that this moment has. Only this moment has the crispness. Because the light that you are is only in the present moment. So Nisargadatta says, let's see, the source of all that is the infinite possibility, the supreme reality, which is in you and which throws its power and light and love on every experience. So you see, your power, your light, your love, what you are is what enlightens this moment, makes this moment crisp, and makes this moment seem real. It is literally your own reality that you are seeing reflected back to you. You're believing it's a computer with reality, or it's a calendar with reality, or another person with reality. But the reason the idea of the computer from memory, or the idea of the person from memory, does not have the same crispness is because you are not there. It's your light in this moment that makes everything appear real. It is the real making the unreal appear real. The supreme reality which is in you and which throws its power and light and love on every experience. But this source is not a cause. This light that you are, that makes this moment seem real, is not the cause of the world. That's why A Course in Miracles says God did not make the world or does not make the world. The light is God. The light that you are is God. The reality that you are is God. But it's still. It's present. It makes the unreal appear real. But it does not make the unreal. The unreal is the loop of mind. And so the question then becomes, how to wake up from the loop of mind? How to wake up from believing that the unreal is real? Because again, as we believe, we project, right? Cause and effect are not apart from one another. It's a loop. As we believe, we project. It's the same thing. I have to say it in like two parts, but it's the same thing. As we believe, we project. And as we believe and project and believe and project, although our light is here, our light is what we are, we become unaware of the light because we're too caught up in the believing and the projecting and the projection. So how do we become free of this loop, this circle that seems to be going so, so fast? And yes, Sonia has written in to see the net. And what Nisargadatta is really saying is to focus on the holes in the net. He says there's so many holes in the net. What are the holes? But really, each hole is the opportunity to stop the believing projecting. NTI calls it slits in the script. NTI, in the last few chapters of Acts, talks about this same thing. And in the Bible, it's telling the story of the Apostle Paul, where the Apostle Paul has been arrested. The Jews want to kill him. He's been arrested by the Romans. And the Jews have requested that because he is Jewish, by the way, Paul's half Jewish, half Roman, but the Jews, focusing on his Jewish half, are saying because he is Jewish, he should be sent to Jerusalem to be tried. But they have a secret plot that if the Romans agree, that during the transfer, they will kidnap him and kill him. He'll never actually be tried. Paul, being half Roman, is also on trial by the Romans and could be seen as a Roman citizen and sent to Caesar, where he could appeal to Caesar, but then Caesar definitely has the right to have him executed. And Caesar's not so fond of Jews or Christians. So Paul seems to be in a pretty hairy situation, kind of like no matter which way he goes, it could end in his death. And what NTI asks us to do is to pretend that we're Paul. Just use our imagination for a moment. Pretend that we're Paul. We're standing there. We have the Jews on one side as an enemy who wants us killed. We have the Romans on the other side as an enemy who could have us killed. And he says there's two ways to play this. One way is to get caught up, to get worried, to try and somehow defend, to fight, to fear. And that's being a part of the believing, projecting loop. But NTI also says this situation itself is a slit in the script. Or as Nisargadatta would call it, a hole in the net. It's an opportunity for me to stop believing, stop projecting, just be. The easiest way to do that is to become the observer without any desired outcome. An open sense of curiosity. I wonder what will happen. But in no way participating in heart or mind. A Course in Miracles calls that being above the battlefield. And when we take that stance as the watcher of our life instead of the believer of our life, we reside in the hole or in the slit. And since the projection of the world comes from believing, believing, projecting, right? This stance of not believing is also the stance of not projecting. And to stand securely there in the hole of the net is to awaken and to realize the reality, that which gives its light and love to everything. If we look back at Buddha and his 12 links of interdependent co-arising, again, there's a number of things that are listed here. Ignorance, which is the believing in the world. The personal will, the I want it to happen this way. I want to be set free. I don't want to be killed by either. Right? He also says consciousness, which is the combined energies of both my individual thinking and the thinking of everyone. Right? Everybody that's involved in the play. Again, the senses, our feelings, our cravings, our grasping, it goes on and on and on. On and on for 12. But what is not in Buddha's list as a cause is watching or being. Because watching or being, simply abiding, is not a cause. It does not make the world. And that's what Buddha did under the Bodhi tree, right? He just watched. He did not move. His mind flashed scene after scene after scene, and he was distracted by nothing that his mind showed him, and he awoke. A Course in Miracles, A Course in Miracles teaches us to do the same thing, not necessary. Sorry, my throat is quitting on me. Let's see if we can get it to last a little longer. A Course in Miracles teaches us to do the same thing, not sitting in meditation, but being in the world while not being a part of it. This is what forgiveness is all about, right? My brother can say anything to me, do anything to me, and I am just the watcher. I do not react. I do not believe. I do not get involved. Forgiveness is the same practice. Just not sitting under a Bodhi tree while you do it. The body appears to be moving about. But the concept, the core concept is the same. The not believing, the not being a part of it, being the watcher, being above the battlefield, standing in the hole of the net, exiting through the slit in the script, not playing, not participating. This is how we awaken. So as this new year begins, I guess one question each of us could ask ourselves is, what is the best way for me to increase my ability to not believe, not participate? There are a number of tools available. If you go to our website and look under forms of worship, you'll see several listed right there, several ways to do this same thing. But if we really want to awaken in our hearts, if we really want to know the reality of what we are, we need to understand the one thing that really works. And that's not believing. Not getting sucked into, not getting involved, standing back, watching, just being, allowing. And if you look at our core values, those will help you to do the same. Allowing others to be where they are. Allowing others to have their paths of awakening without trying to tell them that their path should be my path. See, that's all still a part of believing, all still a part of projecting. I need do nothing, the Course says. Just be. And with that, I'm going to play another John Lennon song. This John Lennon song is a song where he had the same realization that we just spoke about. It's called Watching the Wheels, and it's about him making the choice to just be when everyone does not understand and they want him to get involved in the world again. While I play this song, you can contemplate today's reading and today's teaching. And also, if you choose to, you can make a donation to Awakening Together. Barb will provide a link. So here's another John Lennon song, Watching the Wheels.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin. When I say kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. Well, they give me all kinds of advice, designed to enlighten me. When I tell them that I'm doing fine, watching shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball. Sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round. I just had to let it go. Lost in confusion. Well, I tell them there's no problem, only solutions. Well, they shake their heads and they look at me as if I've lost my mind. I'm just sitting here doing time. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the
Notice Dove wrote, that's the perfect song, and I love that song. There's something so inspirational to me about that song. It is definitely one of my very, very favorite songs. So this is the part of the gathering where you all now get to share based on today's reading and today's teaching. Oh, I noticed Jay made a cute comment, not participate, let it dissipate. So, hey, that rhymes. Yeah, it's a wonderful slogan. Not participate, let dissipate. So I'd love to hear from someone else regarding today's sharing. We have 10 to 12 minutes available to us for this. So who would like to go first? All right, Lynn, the mic is yours.
Lynn always has to go first. I'm actually being called now, right now, to go out into the world and do things. And I'm listening to the message and I'm doing the lessons and I'm recognizing that it doesn't matter if I'm going out into the world and doing things. I'm still in that same still quiet place. There's flicked. Because the work that I'm doing, the things that I'm being guided to do are complete non-attachment. It is almost like I'm not involved in any way at all in it other than to be the vessel for what is happening, what is coming. And it's so funny to me because for so much of my adult life, that was what I wanted, was to be a speaker,
to influence people, to tell people, here's what's right and here's the message. And, you know, if you just do this, you'll really be happy. And at the same time, I was not happy at all. And I thought that it would make me happy to do that, to make other people happy or to pretend I was happy so that other people could be happy. And now I'm happy and I have absolutely no desire to do anything other than just be where I am in this joyful place. And, you know, it's something that started happening, you know, well, God only knows when. There's no cause. It is just happened and happening. And I remember, it's so funny, I didn't take it personally when Timothy Conway said to me in Santa Barbara, go out and share this bliss. You can't keep this to yourself. And I said, oh, I am doing that. I am doing that. But I really didn't know what he really meant by that until just now. And I see that that's exactly it. It is being in the world, but not of the world. It is letting go and watching the wheels go round. And if the body of Lynn is moving around and talking and writing and traveling and doing things, that's the wheels going round and round. It's all a part of the play and the plan. And what a joyous place. What a joyous event. Thank you so much, Regina. I hope someone else wants to share as well.
Thank you very much, Lynn. And yes, the watching the wheels go round and round is an inner attitude. It's an inner attitude. For some, it may look like sitting in a cave for 17 years, as Ramana Maharshi did. And for some, it may look like fighting a battle, as Arjuna did. So, but it's an inner attitude. Yeah, I love that line, no longer riding on the merry-go-round, from the song we just played, Watching the Wheels. Phil has just commented on that line, just shared that line in the room. I mentioned earlier in the announcements section the Bhagavad Gita class that's coming up. For those of you who don't know anything about the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is about learning detachment or even-mindedness, learning to stay focused on the truth even while the body, you could say, completes its karma, would be the words, while the body does what the body is to do. And so it's very much about learning to have that inner attitude. I've always thought the Bhagavad Gita was a perfect teaching for the person who appears to have a very busy life. Because it's teaching us how to be in that state of meditation all of the time, even as the busyness continues. So if any of you feel that you have that busy life, and yet you would like to learn that inner attitude, spending 3 weeks with the Bhagavad Gita course may be extremely helpful. So keep in mind that you can go and register for that until February 3rd on our website under classes. We still have at least 5 minutes left. So who else would like to share? All right, Dove, the mic is yours.
All right, thank you so much, Regina. What a wonderful topic. And even though I knew that the topic was everything creates everything, I had no idea that this was what the topic was going to be about. This morning I was in the shower, and when I'm in the shower, I usually do the final lesson. Holy Spirit, I put you in charge of my request, knowing the direction that you lead brings me peace. And then all of a sudden, kind of dropped a bottle of shampoo. Didn't drop the whole bottle, but enough for me to all of a sudden use some expletives. And I said, wow, I just asked the Holy Spirit to lead me to peace and outcomes expertise. What is this all about? What is this for? And it came to me, you know, coming into this new year, I said, my only resolution, which I kind of borrow from Krishnamurti, is no matter what happens, I do not mind. No matter what happens, I do not mind. I said, oh, that I'm going to use that topic for next week when I'm on, that you must refuse to identify with the happenings of this world, because they will actually take you right back into the ego thought system in which you are reacting to the things of this world. And then I'm listening to your talk this morning, and I realized, wow, you just said it all. So thank you so much. Thank you, Regina. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dev. And Sue, I'll turn the mic over to you in just a moment. But another thing I wanted to share is when David Hempel was here this week, another thing he said was that Nikki and I are always saying that everyone is teaching the same thing, that all the teachings are the same. And he said he doesn't see it that way. To him, they're all different. And I corrected that. I said everyone clear is teaching the same. I said there are unclear teachings that don't point toward truth. But everyone clear, no matter how they word it, is teaching the same thing. You know, it looks like A Course in Miracles is teaching forgiveness, and it looks like Buddhism is teaching meditation, and it looks like Sri Ramana Maharshi is teaching self-inquiry, and Nisargadatta is teaching focusing on the I Am presence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What they're all teaching is this inner posture of just being and letting the world go on without you. Forgiveness is a way of doing that. Self-inquiry is a way of doing that. Meditation is a way of doing that. They're different hiking paths to the same mountaintop. They are all saying the same thing. They're all asking us to let go of the believing and the participating and learn to just be. Sue, the mic is yours.
Oh, thank you so much, Regina. What a wonderful talk this morning. The idea of cause and effect and what you spoke about reminds me of the decision-making process that the text talks about. I forgot the exact title of that section. The Rules for Decision-Making, I think that's what it was. And I think the final rule is, I forgot what to decide, which I just think is fantastic. I mean, it's just kind of like total surrender. I forgot, and it is one mechanism of saying I'm going to surrender this whole thing over, and the whole idea of surrendering even the decision-making is another. It's like cutting the ego off at both legs. I'm forgetting, and I'm forgetting to decide. But it is like this huge kind of idea of throwing oneself into God. I don't need to know what the problem is, because ego wants to know what the problem is. Oh, I know what the problem is. Is another way of saying, I understand form. I am going to define form, and in that way, I am going to justify my existence and going down that route. So I forgot what to decide is just another way of canceling out this whole idea of cause and effect. Okay, cheers.
Cheers, and I have to follow that with Happy New Year. Right, this time of year, those two statements go together in my mind. Yeah, and you know, one other thing, you know, we're talking about this being above the battlefield posture, this equanimity posture, this watcher observer posture. But another important thing that Nisargadatta pointed out was, again, what makes this world seem real? What makes this moment seem real? Your reality. Your reality is what's real. And again, if you compare the crispness of this moment to the fadedness of a memory or the imagination of the future, you can see that the reality is here. And the reason the reality is here is because you are here, right? And you are reality. You're the one that is making everything appear real. Yeah, I am. Exactly, Paul. So what I would like to do now is play my closing song. This is also a John Lennon song, but I picked a different version. The singer is named Sushila Raman, and the song is Oh My Love. Here we go.
For the first time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see. I see the wind. Oh, I see the trees. Everything is cleared in my heart. I see the clouds. Oh, I see the sky. Everything is clear in our world. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my mind is wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my mind can feel. I feel life. Oh, I feel love. Everything is clear in my heart. I feel sorrow. Oh, I feel dreams. Everything is clear in our world. First time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see.
Beautiful. So it is my love, my light, that gives this moment any apparent reality that it has. I want to thank you all very, very much. Thank you very much, Nancy, for being the reader. Thank you very much, Barb, for being our sanctuary administrator. Thank you, Lynn, Dove, Sue, for participating in the sharing. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Nizar Gadada Maharaj, for your clarity. Thank you, John Lennon, for your music. Next week, Dove will be leading the gathering, followed by Ken Gibson on January 18th and Barb Dearwater on January 25th. So please come back every Sunday this month to hear from our ministers, participate in our weekly gathering. Also remember tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time is our member meeting. I have some things to share, but I will also open it up to questions. All right, everyone. Happy Sunday, and I'll see you later today. Bye-bye.